Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
Now, 92.9 FM ESPN presents Memphis's biggest columnist.
You ain't got to do nothing, homeboy. You ain't writing nothing. No, you ain't. He ain't writing nothing. I ain't letting him write. He ain't getting no interview.
It's the award-winning Jeff Calkins from the Daily Memphian and the Jeff Calkins Show.
I don't get no interview. I'm good.
On 92.9 FM ESPN.
Gentlemen, this is something they call a groundbreaker. So let me first apologize to the shirts and the ties for your makeup. Cause I make you ugly as soon as it drops. We're on a rampage, bubbles popping up before you know it. There's rubble and dust, cause we'll be pushing it up. Somebody say you better run. Yeah, it's an earthquake.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Wednesday. Today on the radio show, let's see. We got a busy one. John Martin's going to join us in the next segment. Chris Harrington straight up at 10 o'clock. And then Sam Hardiman after that. I don't know if you saw this, Jeffrey. But Sam wrote a piece earlier this week that... It was about tree outages. It was about MLG and W and outages. And the news is that tree outages are down 80%. 80%. How about that? By the way, there was another piece late last week, early this week. Murder rate also down considerably. How about that? Are we going to allow the good news to creep in, Jeffrey, or are we so intent on clinging to the bad news that that we won't allow the good news to creep in? Let me ask you this. Have you lost your power lately?
I have not, Jeff.
I haven't lost my power lately. When did you last lose your power?
That is a good question. I try to file those away because of PTSD from...
Here you go. MLG&W's tree trimming map looks like a before and after picture. The city of Memphis-owned utility has seen an almost 80% decline in tree-related power outages from 23 to 24.
I'm nearly certain the last time was the last summer storm of 23, the one that knocked out a lot of power. I think that's the last time we lost it.
I mean, I've now. Do you believe in jinxes? I've now.
Well, as an announcer, I can't believe in an announcer jinx.
And we have a storm bearing down upon us, I guess, although I don't know how much we will be affected by it. Do you have any sense of how much we are going to be affected by it?
The models I saw, 2 days ago, said that we should be getting rain for Thursday and Friday.
We're going to be getting some rain. Hopefully it's just rain. And our streak of good news can continue. Anyway, I get it. There's all kinds of bad news that we can focus on, and particularly when it comes to the murder rate. I don't think anyone is claiming victory here. We're not mission accomplished here or anything like that. But I'm all for power outages coming down and murder rate coming down. We'll talk to Sam Hardiman about that tree story and other matters when he joins us in the second hour. Chris Harrington, and then Sam Hardiman in the second hour. John Martin coming up next. It's the anniversary. It is 9/11. It's not just the anniversary of 9/11. It is, in fact, 9/11 is the anniversary of 9/11. And it is a reminder. It feels like it is a long time ago. I have three sons, all of whom who are grown and out of the house.
Two of which living in New York.
None of whom remember 9/11.
Yeah.
Ben was four, and the others, you know, one was whatever, but barely born, or one was barely born and one was not born.
Yep.
And so we have, at some point, 9/11 goes from this searing, surreal, devastating, maybe the most shocking moment of our lives. When personal tragedies have come to us, that is a national moment.
Yeah.
But as a national moment, it is the most searingly tragic moment in all of us who witnessed our lives. But at some point, it becomes more like Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
Right? Where it is a thing that you
something
knew,
you read about.
The nation
or, well,
went
I mean,
through.
Now, I guess probably they
but
watched it.
I don't know what percentage of Americans now have no recollection of it. In other words, what percentage of Americans are...
So what do we think the number is probably...
Well, how old do you have to be to remember?
That's what I was asking.
Six? You have to be six to remember?
So OJ was 94, which would have made me six. I have a decent memory of that. Like, you know, I mean, I can remember everybody watching. You don't have, like... You obviously don't have the context of everything that's going on, but, like, I remember watching the TV, seeing the Bronco thing.
Right. Yeah. It's just the way I am with, now with JFK, I have no recollection of JFK. I certainly remember RFK, but I was older then. I was, anyway, it is obviously a tragic day. And then, the truth of the matter is that it was absolutely devastating, tragic day. And then the U.S. response to it was also proved to be devastating, because we launched a war that cost many, many, many more people their lives. And I don't think, if you look over there, proved like it was successful. And there were no weapons of mass destruction. And it was a disaster. So the event itself was a horrible, horrible tragedy that will be forever seared in our consciousness. And then the wake of it was a disaster. I recall you were at school, right?
Indeed, I was. So I was in seventh grade science class, and it's funny how, do you remember when there were like big events and you could kind of hear the halls whisper?
But it's not like I could whip out my phone and see
what's going on. And then my teacher goes, "Everybody shut up." And then he walks into the hall to find another teacher and ask what had happened. And we got the update. And then this is kind of the moment where, you know, the Pentagon's getting hit. Everything's getting hit. And so then they called an all-school assembly to say, you know, hey, we're not canceling school today, but if things change,
right,
maybe.
And I'm sure you were sent home. Were you not sent home?
No.
I bet people came and got their kids.
Well, what was weird, I don't really remember a lot of that, because what was weird was the next day was our parent-teacher day, where the teachers went to school. Yeah. So we didn't go to school on Wednesday anyway, so that was a weird...
It's amazing to think, I don't know which is more surreal, witnessing that or then living through this pandemic thing. That was like, we were all holed up in our homes. We're not getting near anyone. Like, that's like these are both like bad movies, right? Both things, terrorist attack, you know, bad movie, pandemic strikes America, shuts it down. We won't shake hands with each other. We're wiping down our groceries. The morgues are literally overflowing in certain cities. There's not, there's both of those things utterly. And you do wonder, with all due respect, what's ahead? Like, the idea that we won't have any more traumatic national events in the next two decades, when we had those in the last two and a half decades, it's sort of far-fetched. We probably will.
I think I would probably argue, on the national level, 9/11 is obviously a bigger deal because of what
is it?
I think from a... You know, it leads to a war. Like, I think from a, if you're looking at it in terms of the state, but on the individual level, I don't even think it's close. I mean, almost every single person was affected by the pandemic.
Yeah. And that's why on a national level, I think it's interesting.
And it's also
every single
school,
person like, was fo- in the country was focused was
like schools the way that
what it has done to schools and kids. Let's be honest, the crime wave that we're having right now
100% tied
is 100% tied to the pandemic. So anyway, it is 9/11, and a lot of people lost their lives on that day, and families were forever reshaped and traumatized and. And then it led to further tragedy and more people losing their life. And then last night we had a debate. I if you listen, Gabe tried to get me to talk about it yesterday. And as Charles said, he was listening. He said, I was Switzerland. That's what I pride myself on being. I'm Switzerland, Jeffrey, when it comes to
Well, you've never lived there,
Charles. No one would never guess. No one could ever guess which side of the aisle I'm on. There was one soundbite that I do think we will remember from this debate, and here it is.
In Springfield, they're eating the dogs, the people that came in. They're eating the cats. They're eating the pets of the people that live there. And this is what's happening in our country.
So vote for Trump to protect the pets. They are eating our dogs. And enough said about that. We did have other news, Jeffrey, both college and pro. I'm going to move on now. Thank you. I'm going to move on. Let's just stick to sports. Yeah, let's just do that. Let's take the NFL first. There will be no investigation of the San Francisco 49ers, it appears, for not being particularly forthcoming on Jordan Mason. And why he was starting in that game. Does that surprise you?
No, and actually, I'm kind of okay with it.
Like they did say he was questionable.
The one that's way more egregious to me was Joe Burrow last year. Joe Burrow walks into the game against the Ravens on Thursday Night Football. He's got a cast on his hand. He's not even on the injury report. And lo and behold, guess what? He hurts his wrist and he's out for the season. Like, that one was... That one's a way more egregious. Like, McCaffrey's listed as questionable. It's not even probable. Like, do I think that they were not telling... Do I think Jordan Mason's telling the truth and Kyle Shanahan and the rest of the Niners are not? Yes, I do. But at the same time, he was listed as questionable.
Right. Other news. Tyreek Hill, through his attorney, has called for the immediate termination of the escalating officer. The escalating officer is Danny Torres, and he's the one who yesterday, when we talked about this, while acknowledging that Tyreek Hill did not exactly cooperate, Danny Torres went way over the line, escalated this 0-60, and was, in fact, very clearly the escalating officer, and it seemed outrageous to us, that particular response. So Tyreek Hill, his attorney, has called for the immediate termination of the escalating officer. Further says, the events that occurred on Sunday, September 8th, 2024, just a reminder of the realities of many injustices that people of black and minority communities face at the hands of law enforcement. While we are no way accusing the officer of being racist, we are accusing the customs and practices of law enforcement from a historical standpoint of being discriminatory and oppressive to black and minority communities. We cannot ignore this fact and remain silent on the issue just because it's a tough conversation. And I don't think there's any doubt that, in fact, the customs and practices of law enforcement from a historical perspective have been discriminatory. We've seen it now with body cams. It has been brought to light. So however it played out in this instance, I think from a historical perspective, that is inarguable. In the meantime, the Danny Torres's lawyer called for his immediate reinstatement, said that it was premature to put him on leave and should be reinstated immediately. So there is that. Dolphins, of course, play tomorrow night, my beloved Buffalo Bills. So this is going to remain in the spotlight, right, Jeffrey?
I would think so, right? Yeah. I mean, I think the fact that it's Tyreek Hill is going to keep it in the spotlight for a decent amount of time. But
well,
yeah,
that's the thing.
It's a standalone
game. Player who causes attention, who brings attention to himself because of his extraordinary explosiveness, right, and speed and skills. So people are going to be talking about him. And then when you talk about him, this thing will absolutely come up. There is talk on another front of Deshaun Watson of whether this latest lawsuit is going to enable the Browns to escape the contract, to void the contract. I'll say this. I hope not. They knew what they were getting when they signed Deshaun Watson. They went in eyes wide open. There were one after another, after another, after another, after another, after another, after another lawsuit alleging sexual assault on the part of Deshaun Watson, and they traded for him and gave him a guaranteed deal. So the fact that another emerges, I certainly hope this does not allow them to get out of the contract. Not because I want him to get paid. That's certainly it. But it seems to me that if you make that sort of, if you throw out your conscience, your morals, your standards, you should have to live with the consequences. And that means having a crappy quarterback who is eminently dislikable on your team for the duration of that contract.
Yeah, to me, it's very plain and simple. You were totally fine with all the lawsuits that were coming out when you were acquiring him, and now all of a sudden you're not? Well, what's changed?
Well, and evidently, the only caveat here is that...
And this isn't a new... this is not a new allegation, right?
His contract does provide that if he was to be suspended during the seasons in which he was suspended, that would not be cause for the contract to be terminated. Okay. In other words, the contract said, "Listen, if Deshaun Watson is paraphrasing is suspended by the league for the, you know, whatever these last 2 years were,
right.
That is not a cause for termination." It does not say that about this year. So, if in the unlikely event that the NFL decides to suspend him for this year, the Browns will at least have an argument saying, "Listen, we said that we're willing to pay him and to stand by him if he's suspended these years. We didn't say it this other year. There's a reason we said that is because if a new something came up, we wanted the right to walk away. So it's basically in the contract that we should have the right to walk away."
Correct.
That will be their argument.
Yes. And then the other argument will be like, okay, who funded this new lawsuit?
Anyway, there you go. That is it. Any other NFL news you particularly wanted to get to? Because I did want to, a couple things in college football before we get to John Martin.
I mean... Did you see the ratings? Turns out we like football.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
People watch.
You'll never believe this.
People watched.
Via the Sports Business Daily, the opening weekend of the 24th season ended with an average of 21 million viewers on the traditional broadcast networks, NBC, CBS, Fox, ABC, ESPN, and ESPN2. Keep in mind, a lot of us couldn't watch on ESPN and ESPN2. That number doesn't include the 14 million who watched the Packers and Eagles streaming-only game on Peacock. That number nearly doubled the last streaming-only regular season game from NBC in December of 2023.
Is this up
12%.
Oh,
so another,
God.
Which is insane
How
to think
we,
about because it's already the highest.
It's not shocking that we like football. It's shocking that we like it more.
Correct, that it keeps going up.
Who knew there was a more? Anyway, all right. Over to college football. I was looking at The Athletic today, where there's a mailbag, and the mailbag is ask the following questions.
Okay? All right,
let me ask you this. First one is, if you had to bet everything on a one loss team to make the college football playoff, would you put it on LSU, Clemson, Notre Dame, or Michigan? They obviously all have one loss at this point. LSU, Clemson, Notre Dame, or Michigan, you have to pick one of those teams that will, in fact, be in the 12-team playoff. Who are you putting your money on?
All right, I'm eliminating Michigan. I think that's closer to a 7-5 team than a playoff team. So
yep.
I'm eliminating them. With LSU, Nussmeier got kind of banged up, but it seemed maybe precautionary. But I do think if he's battling injury all year, they're very limited. Notre Dame's going to have... the worst loss, because right now I think USC is a playoff team. and I think that Georgia's obviously a playoff team. I don't think either of those losses are bad losses. And I know Clemson loses by more, but at the same time, I think Georgia's better than USC. I weirdly think...
The answer's Clemson, isn't it? Clemson is the could very well get the automatic bid, except Miami's good.
Correct. And then the question then becomes, I'm still in this camp of, I will believe 10-2 Notre Dame gets left out when I see it. And I know the schedule's not great, but like...
So you'd pick Notre Dame. Why not Clemson? Because you think they'll lose to Miami?
Yeah, and I still think... I think they're going to have to win the ACC to get in. And I would rather bet on Notre Dame running the table.
Notre Dame's offense has looked bad.
They have, but that's what they always do.
So you'd go Notre Dame?
I think so.
All right. Next one was...
I'm splitting hairs there.
Was power rankings for the...
G5.
For the G5. And according to this particular power ranking, over at The Athletic, number one, your Memphis Tigers. Number one, Memphis, Seth Hennigan for the Heisman, is what he said. Although Seth Hennigan has not been Heisman-esque, let's be honest, in this start to the season. Number one, Memphis. Number two, USF. It has a huge September 1 home game against Miami, then back-to-back tests against Tulane and Memphis. What do you think of USF?
So, I mean, we basically watched the same game that we watched last year, which is USF presented problems for Alabama. The difference was Alabama in 6 minutes had a scoring barrage to make the final score look better. I still think that USF's defense is going to be a problem for USF, not for other teams. Like, I think that game said more about Jalen Milroe than it did really about anything else, because there were guys running wide open and he's just trying to hit his home runs.
Three is Tulane. I could not have been more impressed with redshirt freshman quarterback Darian Mensa, who was terrific, in Tulane's heartbreaker against Kansas State. The Green Wave could win the AAC.
He was terrific, but he also made the critical error that lost the game.
That's true. Four, Boise. I'd have the Broncos number one if they had defeated Oregon. They need to knock off Washington State in 2 weeks because the Mountain West will not provide opportunities for quality wins. As we look at across the country at the other contenders, it is interesting to think when their tests come.
Yep.
That game for Boise State will be huge. Washington State, 2 weeks. If they win that, it's looking good for Boise State.
Yeah, but I mean, we're now in the situation where if Memphis wins Saturday, they can legitimately say they control their destiny.
I think that's true.
And I get it. That's an if.
I want to get to Moist. I want to go back to Memphis for a minute. And then five, Northern Illinois. Like 2021 Cincinnati, the Huskies now boast a huge win in Notre Dame. Thanks, Notre Dame. Yep. Notre Dame's there for you. If you need your, if you're a group of five and you need your resume boosted, there you are. They probably need to go undefeated, however, because the MAC will drown down their schedule strength. Will Northern Illinois go undefeated in the MAC?
It's highly unlikely.
That's what I think. So here's the thing. In terms of Memphis, I guess my view is, yes, if they win, they control their own destiny. But what has happened so far this year, both because of what has happened to Florida State and then looking around what is happening nationally at the other contenders, what has happened is you have turned this game from a be nice if they win, but close loss also looks good, to a yes, if they win, they control their own destiny. But if they lose, it is more important to actually win this now than we thought it would be a month ago.
Yeah, but if you look at it historically, the G5 teams that get in, like if we're equating the G5 New Year's Six representative to this spot, which wouldn't you say that's an equivalent?
Sure. Yeah. Yes.
Kind of what they do is they beat a team that's in the Power Five that's enough of a brand, but it's kind of down. And like we saw this with Houston in 2015 beats Louisville on a night at Louisville where it was a big like Thursday night game, but that Louisville team wasn't all that good. Like, this is kind of the spots that we see. It's like,
but they beat them.
They did, and that's what I'm saying is like, even if Florida State's not great.
Oh no, you'll get credit for beating them. But if you lose to them, it is much more important to win this than I thought it would be a month ago.
Yeah,
I would make the argument that it is not.
It still feels like Boise's getting credit for a close loss to Oregon. I do agree with that. I also think that Oregon has shown some red flags. And like,
well, that is true. Boise gets credit for a close loss, and now we know Northern Illinois has an impressive win.
Right.
And those two things. And then, by the way, we also know that Tulane looks... some of us thought, actually, Tulane would not really drop off me, and particularly, and USF. I mean, UTEP has dropped off, you know, but I mean...
UTSA.
UTSA has dropped off, but Tulane and USF look terrific.
Yes.
At this point. Okay. And then finally... If you go over, I know this is never too early for this, Jeffrey. If you go over to ESPN, who would be in the playoff right now? It's really fascinating. And it does, I don't know, if you didn't like this 12-game playoff, there's something wrong with you. Because this is great fun. So the first round buys at this point, according to this projection, Georgia, we certainly agree with that, right?
Yep.
Ohio State, we agree with that, right? Miami?
Yep,
looks like the logical one. And then you got to pick one from the Big 12, and I'm going Oklahoma State.
Is that who I think I'm going Utah.
Okay, whatever. Either way. Okay. So then you've got first-round matchups, and these are on campus. You've got Northern Illinois at Texas.
Yep.
That's... not that interesting, but at least the Notre Dame game makes us think, oh, you never know. But we do know, right?
Yes.
It's not that interesting. Then you've got number 9, Penn State, at number 8, Oregon.
Heck of a game.
Hell of a game, right?
Yeah, nice conference game.
Hell of a game. Then you have, and I don't know that folks would want to hear this or not, the number 11, Tennessee Volunteers, at the number 6, Ole Miss Rebels. How do you feel about that?
Another big conference game. And I think that game would be fascinating because I think those teams are remarkably similar.
Yeah, and obviously they don't play each other during the regular season. Tennessee plays Georgia on November 16th, I think it is. But there you go. Okay, how about this one? This one's fun. Alabama, number 10, Alabama, at number 7, USC.
I mean...
like, aren't these all games magnificent?
Yeah. I mean, that was kind of the idea of it.
Yeah. And then the first four out, Missouri, Kansas State, the Utes, and Clemson. The next four out, Oklahoma, LSU, Michigan, and Boise State. But my God. I saw Wolken wrote a piece saying one of the problems with this playoff... and this is an interesting thing. It will be interesting to see how this plays out. One of the problems with this playoff, it's going to run into NFL.
No, I mean, that's going to be a huge part of it, especially like the first weekend. But we're going to have, I mean, it's going to make those entire weekends have significant football games. It's going to do more damage to relationships than it is to, than to the sport.
It may do more damage to relationships than it will do to the sport. Okay, we're going to take a break. We got a big day today. We got John Martin coming up next. Then we have Chris Harrington, and then we have Sam Hardiman. If you are getting something framed, I've said this before, everyone I've sent there seems delighted. The Frame Corner, 5035 Park Avenue. So whether it's wedding photos, whether it's graduation photos, whether it's a sports memorabilia, whether it's your grandfather's Arrowhead collection, head on in to the Frame Corner, framecornermemphis.com. They'll sell you a frame. You can walk in and pick out a frame and do it yourself. But what they really specialize in is expert, beautiful, skilled custom framing. 5035 Park Avenue, framecornermemphis.com. Jeffcawkins.com. Back within a moment with John Martin. It is the Jeff Cawkins Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Jeff's guests appear on the Frame Corner phone lines. Frame Corner, with expert custom and do-it-yourself framing since 1975 on Park Avenue in East Memphis. Now, back to the Jeff Cawkins Show, live from the Genesis Memphis Covington Pike Studios on 92.9 FM ESPN.
NFL Week 2 is here. You can start the season with a big return on FanDuel, America's number one sports book. New to FanDuel, get started with $200 in bonus bets guaranteed when you place your first $5 bet. My beloved Bills at the Dolphins on Thursday. Put together your own same game parlay. Go Bills. Go Bills. Josh Allen over passing yards. Dalton Kincaid anytime touchdown. Tyreek Hill under receiving yards. Go Bills. Visit FanDuel.com/Cawkins, C-A-L-K-I-N-S, C-A-L-K-I-N-S, to make every moment more this season. Again, $200 in bonus bets guaranteed when you place your first $5 bet. Must be 21 or older, present Tennessee. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issues, non-withdrawal, but bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem, call Tennessee Redline, 1-800-889-9789. John, I saw, we're waiting for John. We're trying to get John. We're endeavoring to get John. We don't have John yet. Turns out John is not yet available for the radio show. Now he waiting for the heads up here. John actually had the nerve to be, I didn't tweet a single thing about the debate last night. Did not tweet a single thing. John tweeted the debate. One of the things that did strike me, I swear, I think Kamala, like in debate prep, it must be extraordinary. And John, now he does join me. John, who had the nerve to be tweeting about the debate last night. Do you think, it's pretty clear, isn't it, that Kamala Harris practiced what facial expression she was going to make? Don't you believe that? Like, they show the split screen all the time. I think if you spend a week in debate prep, I think in addition to practicing the answers, I think you practice how you're going to stand, how you're going to look, when you're going to laugh. Because honestly, that was some of what she was most effective at last night.
Mm-hmm. Can you hear me first and foremost?
We can hear you, yeah.
Okay. This is always dicey in my house. But, I mean, my guess is she's had a lot of practice over the last 8 years.
Well, that's the thing. She is a prosecutor. She literally stood up in front of juries and made arguments. That's what she did for a living.
Yeah, so, I mean,
you know, yeah.
I wasn't really as, like,
locked in. No, you weren't blown away by her. It was more his craziness that people are commenting on.
Yeah, like, it just kind of descended into madness there once she brought up the rallies. it was like, you know, he short-circuited. And then he just sort of went on, like, the border immigrants, eating pets, immigrants, 65.
Do you realize where, have you studied the history of the eating pets claim?
There's one incident that happened in Ohio that people are, I don't know if it's misinformation or if it's like an old incident or whatever, but there's like this video floating around and, you know, that's the problem, right? The problem becomes.
So what happened was, so J.D. Vance posted on X on Monday. This is what he said. Reports now show that people have had their pets abducted and eaten by people who shouldn't be in this country. Where is our border czar? So that's where it started.
Right.
The next day, Vance again posted on X about Springfield, Ohio, by the way, saying his office had received inquiries from residents who, quote-unquote, said their neighbor's pets or local wildlife were abducted by Haitian migrants. And then he added, it's possible, of course, that all these rumors will turn out to be false. Ted Cruz then posted a photo of a kitten and said, vote for Trump, quote, so Haitian immigrants don't eat us. They then went to the, they then went and asked the mayor of Springfield whether there have been any such incidents. And he said, in response to recent rumors alleging criminal activity by the immigrant population in our city, we wish to clarify that there have been no credible reports or specific claims of pets being harmed, injured, or abused by individuals within the immigrant community. Now, it's pretty clear that Americans everywhere think that immigration, that illegal immigration is a problem. And everyone seems to agree on that, or 90% of America seems to agree on that. But this trope of hordes of immigrants eating children, eating pets, is sort of...
Oh, it'll like, be children next.
It's not just next. Ted Cruz says, so the immigrants don't eat us. That's what he said. It plays into the... You know, this is what they said about Italians in the 1920s and the Irish before that. And like, this is what you do. Whereas the statistics are very clear that immigrants are less likely to commit crimes than us regular old Americans who've been here for a while.
Isn't that as much of anything what America is founded and built upon? Fear.
Fear. I mean, that is what we are about.
About all the communists, right? The McCarthy era, yep. You know?
Yeah, exactly right.
Everybody was a communist when, like, nobody was actually a communist.
Whipped people up into a frenzy over, and of course, and a lot of times, like, there are lots of, there are horrific incidents of immigrants committing crimes. That's no question.
Yeah, but
there's
the
actually not,
that.
There doesn't seem to be any of Haitians eating Fido.
It's anecdotal, right? And so what happens is these politicians who are running on the fears of Americans are extrapolating these anecdotal incidents to make you really feel like this is, that the Martians have found Earth and that they're here to wipe us all out, you know. And I hate that. I really do, because and it doesn't speak to me at all as a voter. Fear politics does not speak to me. And I wish it didn't speak to as many people as it did. Look, I have kids, right? I have children that I've brought into this world, and I think about them every single day. But I don't walk around with my head like, I'm not worried about an immigrant jumping out of the bushes, and attacking me. You know what I'm worried about? I'm worried about sending my kid to school and getting shot.
Because it's interesting you bring this up. So there's are you aware of a singer named Nick Cave? You familiar with Nick Cave? You familiar with Nick Cave, Jeffrey? He's a punk rock guy. But now he's a thinker and a philosopher and whatever else. And he has a website where he answers letters. And someone wrote a letter, and it was about his kid, and it was about cynicism and whatever else, and whether he was like what should he teach his kid? And this is the letter. And I bring this up, and I didn't plan to bring this up because I think for me, it's meaningful with how we think about Memphis too, right? Like, I'm not saying there aren't problems. Of course there are, right? I mentioned earlier, though, like if we're going to look at actual stats, tree outages down 80%. I mean, tree outages MLG&W down 80%. I know you're a big fan of MLG&W, and murder rate also down considerably. Anyway, but people like to almost resist hearing any kind of good news. They only want to wallow in the bad news. So here's the letter that Nick Cave wrote to this guy named Dear Valerio. He said, you are right to be worried about your growing feelings of cynicism and your need to take action, and you need to take action to protect yourself and those around you, especially your child. Cynicism is not a neutral position, and although it asks almost nothing of us, it is highly infectious and unbelievably destructive. In my view, it is the most common and easy of evils. I know this because much of my early life was spent holding the world and the people in it in contempt. It was a position both seductive and indulgent. The truth is, I was young and I had no idea what was coming down the line. I lacked the knowledge, the foresight, the self-awareness. I just didn't know. It took a devastation to teach me the preciousness of life and the essential goodness of people. It took a devastation to reveal the precariousness of the world, of its very soul, to understand that it was crying out for help. It took a devastation to understand the idea of mortal value, and it took a devastation to find hope. Unlike cynicism, hopefulness is hard-earned, makes demands upon us, and can often feel like the most indefensible and lonely place on earth. Hopefulness is not a neutral position either. It is adversarial. It is the warrior emotion that can lay waste to cynicism. Each redemptive or loving act, as small as you like, such as reading to your little boy, or showing him a thing you love, or singing him a song, or putting on his shoes, keeps the devil down in the hole. It says the world and its inhabitants have value and are worth defending. It says the world is worth believing in. In time, we come to find that it is so. And what I like mostly about that, John, is this idea. I mean, you talked about fear. I like this. Unlike cynicism, hopefulness is hard-earned, makes demands upon us, and can often feel like the most indefensible and lonely place on earth. Your thoughts?
I mean, that's a lot. It's 9:45.
And you got a column you wrote. All right, moving right along, John.
I mean, can I get back with you next week on my thoughts?
Please do. Yeah. I was moved by it. It's not just in America, in Memphis, you can choose, like you get to choose. And I'm not saying either one is exclusive, right? Neither one has to be, you don't have to believe in unreality. You don't have to reject statistics or, you know, or shield your eyes to problems to choose, your perspective on those problems, right? And I think that's partly what he was saying. All right, you have a column up. I was interested because I have not read it yet because I think it popped up, whatever, even when I was preparing for the show or whatever. I've tweeted it out. When the season started, Memphis was the third favorite, had the third best odds of the group of five teams to go to the playoff, and that is still true. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, the odds have changed. Like there's been some closing of the gap. There's been some widening of the favorite, for example, but they are still third, yes.
And still behind the same teams were behind?
Yeah, Boise State and Liberty, yeah. Boise State is now plus 220, which they were, I believe, plus 700 before the season started. Memphis was like plus 800. I mean, I might be making those numbers up a little bit, but it was a lot closer in terms of, you know, the pack before the season started, and Boise State is opening up a few links here.
Okay, so that's kind of interesting because it feels like a lot has happened, right? Both we've learned things about teams in the conference, we've learned things about teams nationally, and we've learned about things about Florida State. Your perspective on what needs to happen in Tallahassee this weekend, has it changed?
Well, yeah, it has a lot, you know, and I think it's because of both of the discussions there. One of the crash out that Florida State has had, and then, you know, you look around the country and like the main point of the column was that when we were coming into the season, right or wrong, and we were clearly wrong, we kind of handicapped it like it was going to be the Boise State, right, and the group of the AAC champion. Like that's just sort of been the default setting that it's going to be one of those two things. So that if Memphis just is the group of five, or excuse me, the AAC champion, they win the conference championship, they will almost certainly, you know, depending on what Boise State does, they'll be right there, you know, at the very least, if not the favorite. And what we're learning and what we have learned in the first 2 weeks of the season is that it's just simply not true. And the reason is because of this team from the MAC named Northern Illinois.
But they're going to lose a game.
Well, they could, but I'm just operating on the information that I have today, right? Like, I could say the same thing about Memphis.
Well, I believe that about me. If you're going to ask me, of course, all of this is stipulated. If you're going to ask me, is Memphis going to lose a game? Yes, in conference, I would say yes. If you're going to ask me, I'll be honest, will Memphis lose two games in conference? I might say
they're
yes.
They're huge favorites to do that.
Yeah, I would say yes.
I mean, they're huge favorites.
But the argument is, but But in order to, because they were dreaming about the playoff, you have to stipulate that the team you care about is going to do what you need it to do to put it in the conversation.
Right. That's right. But again, what we did not account for is a team not named Boise State, not in the Mountain West, not in the AAC, having the best win that anybody from those leagues is going to have this year. Right. We couldn't have accounted for that.
And then we didn't account for Florida State stinking.
And we didn't account for Florida State being as bad as they are. So, you know, this idea that it was a straight line, it's really not. It's really not at all. I mean, yes, if Memphis goes undefeated, then they will be in the playoff. But, like, Memphis can't go undefeated. I mean, it's just not going to happen.
They can.
I mean, they can, but they won't. I mean, they're just not going to.
It seems highly unlikely that they will.
I mean, like, if you tell me that history will be made in Memphis, Tennessee, you know, other than that,
I guess my point is this, is that my perspective has shifted in this way. I think they have to beat Florida State, and I didn't think that before the season. That's the big change for me. But A, because of what has happened around them, but more because of what has happened with Florida State. And honestly, if you look back at the magical seasons, Memphis wins these games. You know what I mean? Memphis didn't come close to beating Ole Miss. Memphis beat Ole Miss. You know, like, that's what you have to do in the magical seasons. And Memphis has to go down there. And I'm not saying, you know, it's a abject failure. What a joke of a team if they lose. They're supposed to lose. But I think what shifted for me is I used to think, really before the season, I said, yeah, just get within six, you know, of Florida State, and everything's right. Fine. I don't think that anymore. I think they have to beat Florida State.
Well, yeah, because, you know, you're just, at this point, you're just talking W's and L's, right? I mean, it was supposed to be this sort of shot at a heavyweight, you know, that, like, hey, see where you stack up, and then you know, get ready for conference play, and ideally, you know, you run the table, or at the very least only lose, you know, one more. But now it's sort of become a situation where you have this sort of shell, this fighter that's a shell of himself that is still has still got that in him. It's like fighting Mike Tyson at 54. You know, like, he still might get you.
But you know? I gather, I didn't hear this, but Gabe asked me about it later. You gave Memphis a 5% chance of winning this game?
I give him a 5% realistic chance. Yeah.
Why so meager?
I mean, we're just operating sort of within the confines of reality. Memphis has not beaten a Power 5 team on the road, I believe, since 2004. So, you know, even if Florida State is down, even if they are, you know, and that was with D'Angelo, by the way, even if they are down, and even if they, you know, are totally deflated, like, there's still a competitive advantage that the Florida State Seminoles are going to have over the Memphis Tigers. Like,
I agree. That's why I would give them an 80% chance to win.
So I say 5, you say 20. I might say 20 if all things were equal, but then I'm going to say, okay, well, this Florida State team is 0-2. They're as desperate as they're ever going to be this year.
It's weird. You think the 0-2 makes them more likely to win, not less likely to win?
I do, because, like, there was, like, some chance psychologically that Memphis could come in and, you know, Florida State's 2-0, maybe could catch them, you know. But, you know, now they're just all their antennas are up. I see no universe where Memphis wins the game. I always try to tell people, like, if I believe it, I will tell you. Like, when Memphis was playing Alabama in basketball 3 years ago, you know, I said I liked Memphis in this game. This is when they were on the 4-game losing streak. You know, I was like, yeah. I like Memphis to win this game. I'm not just going to say Memphis will win the game because I do radio in Memphis, though. You know, like, I mean,
you don't have to say Memphis will win the game. You can give them 20% chance, though. That way you can be right and you're not, like, piling on. You know, that's what I choose to do.
I'm not piling on. I'm just kidding.
What struck you most beyond the Raiders going for it? And by the way, I was listening yesterday. You had a guest on who thought the Raiders were supposed to punt on 4th-and-1 with 6 minutes left, trailing by a touchdown. You know, where were they? On the 41? On the 40? Where were they?
On the Chargers 43, yeah.
On the 43. That was shocking to me. But I'll tell you what really stuck out for me. What stuck out for me was the bad quarterbacking. And it was, there was so much bad quarterbacking. And it wasn't, and the rookies were all bad. Like, they're supposed to be bad, but that's a reminder that they're supposed to be bad. The rookies were bad, and then just look around. Like, you know, there were a whole bunch of quarterbacks, Deshaun Watson, Daniel Jones, Kirk Cousins. There was just a lot of really bad quarterbacking.
Yeah, it certainly was. And there's a thought that, you know, at some point it was going to start being efficient in the NFL after all these years to recommit to the run game. I mean, the average passing yards on Sunday, I think, was 185.
Right.
I mean, it was really, really bad. I mean, even Justin Herbert, I think, had 164 yards, right? And there's this argument that, you know, because the league has shifted so far one way with the pass, that the smart teams, like the San Francisco 49ers, are going to recommit to the run. And the pendulum is swinging the other way. So, I mean, I think that is part of what's happening too, Jeff. Like,
that's what Jeffrey brought up yesterday. That's exactly the point, like, Jeffrey made yesterday. That the most striking thing wasn't, in fact, the crappy quarterbacking. It was the recommitment to the run you saw. Nowhere more clearly than in Buffalo, honestly.
Right, and I would say, like, that's what I would do in, like, with the Giants. I would definitely recommit to the run. I would probably go with a 90-10 split there based on Daniel Jones. I mean, that guy is so bad, bro. And they just keep making excuses for him. But you know what? Lots of quarterbacks have bad offensive lines. Lots of quarterbacks have lack of talent and still find a way to at least look, you know, somewhat mediocre. I mean, that guy is just as bad as it, he is the bottom of the barrel. I think he might be the worst quarterback in the league.
How do you feel about the Titans matchup this week? How do you feel about, speaking of bad quarterbacks, how do you feel about Will Levis, what he did? We left out Bryce Young, by the way. There's just many.
Bryce Young was bad. Bryce Young was very bad, very disappointing. You know, Will Levis, this is his first full-time starting year. You know, so I'll give him a little bit of grace. I mean, those were ambitious mistakes that he made.
Terrific defense. Terrific defense.
Where? Chicago?
Yeah, they're great.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're great.
Yeah. Yeah, no question. They're on the up and up. So, but Daniel Jones is like, he's like 30. You know, like, what are we doing here, man? Like, Bryce Young, you know, rookie, basically, you know, on a horrible team with a new coach.
I don't know if you knew this. Daniel Jones is known to eat cats and dogs. Did you know that? No, it's true.
I would start posting that.
Daniel Jones eats cats and dogs. John, column's up. People can read it over at the Daily Memphian. I'll be listening at 11 o'clock. Thank you, sir.
All right, buddy. Talk to you later.
Yeah. John didn't want to hear about my optimism. He didn't want to hear my soaring quote from Nick Cave. So there you go. We got Chris Harrington coming up next. If you're selling your house, here's some optimism for you. If you're selling your house, I will be optimistic if you call Josh Hysaw. 901-461-8147. 901-461-8147. Ashley called him. Ashley heard me talking about it right here on this radio station. Called him. I was a little bit skeptical. Could he really be that great? Josh sold Ashley's house for full asking price, and it took less than a week. That may exact same thing may not happen to you, but Josh Hysaw knows what he's doing when it comes to selling houses. It's why he'll let you out of your contract at any time risk-free, because he has the confidence to do that. Call Josh Hysaw. Phone number is 901-461-8147, or joshhasthebuyers.com. Back next with Chris Harrington, then Sam Hardiman. It is Jeff Gawkin Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Lose control, I know how high to try.
Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian on the Grizzlies, Memphis, and more. Presented by the Majestic Grill. Rediscover downtown dining. Chris Harrington on 92.9's Jeff Calkins Show.
Presenting joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
It's Me and Mia by Ted Leo and Pharmacist. Indie punk band Ted Leo, born on this day in 1970.
All right, Chris. A couple NBA things real quick. I see Hubie Brown in another. Now he's going into the Sports Broadcasting Hall of Fame. He's already in the Naismith Hall of Fame. This is all the Halls of Fame. Basketball is a terrible Halls of Fame because it's got this Naismith Hall of Fame, but then it's got a separate College Basketball Hall of Fame, even though college basketball is included in what you do to get into the Naismith Hall of Fame. He's also in the National Sports Media Association Hall of Fame. Now he's in the going to go into the Sports Broadcasting Hall of Fame. Do you like Hubie? Do you care particularly about who talks to you about games on TV? Do you have preferences, and do you like Hubie?
Oh, I mean, of course I like Hubie. Everyone likes Hubie. I was more tuned in to listen to Hubie when I was sitting in a room in front of him after games listening to him. I don't pay close attention to the announcers during a game. I mean, sometimes I'll notice things they say, but a lot of times it's just like, you know, the parent's voice in a Charlie Brown, you know, cartoon or whatever. I'm not really hanging on every word of the announcers. It's just part of the atmosphere.
Okay. And then Adam Silver yesterday, he talked, although I'll be honest, he talked about a variety of topics. I didn't, maybe it's because it didn't feel, there wasn't particular clarity on any of it, but maybe I just didn't understand it. Adam Silver talked about, so first he talked about the TV deal, and he did acknowledge that the national TV deal is not necessarily good for local TV deals, but he basically said, you know, we're going to get through this year and then figure out on the other side. I don't, you know, and it's pretty clear that they are going to have to figure out what they're going to do locally. I don't know if you read his comments, but that's what he said about the TV deal.
Yeah. I mean, I think all that is accurate. The thing about it's not just the sports thing. It's like an everything thing, you right. know, I mean, figuring out where to watch things and how to watch things and what you want to pay for to watch certain things or not, and all of this, right? We were talking about movies yesterday. I was saying, like, you know, I go to this website, justwatch.com, and I type in the names of movies, and I figure out where they're showing, right? Because otherwise, who knows, you know? It almost feels like there should be a Just Watch for sports. So you just type in, like, the game and figure out this is the service or whatever it's on, because it's really hard to keep up with it. And so... Yeah, I mean, you know, it's rough out there. I do think from a league revenue perspective, I mean, the local deals are very important, but the big you know, collectively shared big pot, you know, national, international broadcast deals are sort of what they have to prioritize, and then you sort of go from there.
And the grumpiness comes from the honestly. Although I don't think the Grizzlies are happy that their Bally's deal has been reduced this year. They're clearly not. I think for them, the local deal was never the biggest share of the money anyway. So to increase the national pot is more important.
Yeah,
for the New York Knicks,
it makes
you grumpy.
Lakers or something, yeah. I think it's hard. You know, a lot of teams, it's hard to generate tons of money on your local deals. And I think that's one of the areas where the revenue discrepancy between markets is probably the highest. I don't know if this is true, but I would guess it might be true that the revenue discrepancy in local broadcast deals between, say, the Grizzlies and the Lakers might be even higher than the ticket revenue. I don't know if that's true or not, but I think it might be.
Well, yeah. Okay. They also talked about expansion. Again, didn't really say anything there other than that we'll take it up at some point. They did talk about whether there's going to be you know, whether there's going to be some European presence. Now, whatever that would look like, it's entirely unclear. I gather the European leagues have not been on particularly sound financial footing recently. And so, I'm just reading the stories about it. And so that's why there might be more NBA involvement. Obviously, in terms of domestic expansion, it feels like someday, inevitably, there will be a team in Seattle again, and it feels like there could be a team in Las Vegas again. And whether that is by expansion or by relocation, You know, it's impossible to know. Your thoughts on all of that?
I mean, I think everyone's, I think the league is due for expansion. I think the talent base supports it. I think, you know, Seattle is just sitting right there. I think everyone assumes there will be expansion by a couple teams. One will be in Seattle. Everyone basically assumes the other will be in Las Vegas. I don't know if I'm as crazy about that idea as other people are, maybe it's because I don't gamble. But I just wonder about climate and everything else in terms of that market. But I think the league is due for expansion. And I think Seattle and some other North American market, I would be wary of. You're talking about like adding a team. You know, there's been talk about Mexico City in the past, or, you know, the idea of putting a team in Europe. I just be wary of the travel complications with a lot of that.
Right. All right. You've got a piece up, as you do now, about film and about what is coming and what we could watch this weekend. But I want to start that you have watched at least some of the Craig Brewer series Fight Night. Where'd you find it? And what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, Craig is not the creator of the series, so it's not his series. He directed the first two episodes and the last two episodes of this 8-episode series. I don't think he's not involved in the middle four in a tangible way. So he is involved in it. He is a producer and one of the directors. I've watched the first two episodes, which he did, and I thought it was fun. I do plan to watch the rest. There's a lot of interesting actors in here. Some he's worked with, some he hasn't. Don Cheadle, who he hasn't, is in this. It's colorful. It's got a lot of vibrancy to it. I like crime story kind of stuff. I like period piece crime story kind of stuff. So it's sort of up my alley. And so I thought it was pretty good. I plan to watch the rest of it.
And where was it? You had it?
Peacock.
But you had
Apparently
Peacock.
I guess my wife needed to watch Law and Order. I don't know. Apparently we had Peacock.
Okay. You also recommend a film called Rebel Ridge. What is Rebel Ridge, and where will I find it?
Yeah, this is picking up a lot of word of mouth just in the last week, and it really deserves it because it's really, really good. It's probably it's easily a top five movie so far this year that I've seen. It's on Netflix. It's a Netflix movie, and it popped up on the site a few days ago. And the Netflix movies are real erratic in terms of quality. This is one by this director named Jeremy. I'm going to mispronounce his name. Jeremy Saulnier. And he had a couple movies, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 years ago, a couple movies that were low budget thrillers, but got good notices, good reviews, got theatrical distribution. They were played in Memphis, Blue Ruin and Green Room. And those are really good movies, but really sort of low budget, sort of brutal thrillers. This movie is in the thriller genre, but it's better. It's a little bit higher production value, and it's not as brutal. In fact, one of the interesting things about it is it's an action movie in which no one dies and there's very little bloodshed. And that's sort of part of the logic of the action in an interesting way. But it's sort of an intentional gloss on First Blood, the movie that started the Rambo series, which is much different from its sequels, which Sylvester Stallone played a Vietnam vet. Uh-huh. Sort of a loner who was drifting through a town and gets harassed by the local police, and they push him too far and things happen. It's sort of similar to that with a little civil asset forfeiture plot line thrown in. It's really, really good. It's if you like just good, watchable, really well directed, sharp action movies, this is a really exceptional one.
Is First Blood good?
First Blood's very good. People think of that in terms of the sequels, which were really junky and sort of whatever, but those are totally different from that first movie. That first movie is quite good.
Huh. Okay, what is coming on the commercial big screen to Memphis this week? What could we watch?
Not much. I think Beetlejuice is going to dominate box office for a second week in a row. If you haven't seen that, that's probably your best bet. But the biggest new movie is a horror movie called Speak No Evil, which is a remake of a Danish movie from a couple years ago that people really liked. And apparently it's a very faithful, it's for people who don't want subtitles, basically. They're not trying to do anything different with it. They're just making the same movie, but in English, basically. But it's a sort of a movie about, sort of a horror movie in the discomfort subgenre, which is maybe not my favorite. And it's about a family that goes on vacation, in a different country, and they meet another family on vacation, and they become friends, and their new friends invite them to their country house for the weekend, and then things take a bad turn.
I got no use for this thing. I got no use for this. All right, and then the last thing is Blazing Saddles 50th anniversary. It's being shown at Malco's showing it at a couple theaters. Paradiso, is that right? And
I think Collierville, and then Hollywood 20 showing it too. Yeah, it's the 50th anniversary screening of Blazing Saddles. I've seen Blazing Saddles, but it's been at least 10 years, so I'd be interested to see it again. And like, I wonder like how that holds up. You know, we're so sensitive about everything these days. I don't know, like, have Blazing Saddles, how that flies, because it's very not sensitive about anything. Like, it's notably like one of the more irreverent and daring like comedies ever. It's a Mel Brooks movie about the first black sheriff in the West, played by Cleavon Little.
All right. And then finally, Chris, I'm just curious. So we get very little campaigning here because Tennessee's going to vote the way it's going to vote. And Minnesota's going to vote the way it's going to vote, isn't it? Like, do you get, obviously...
There was some thought early in the process that Minnesota might be in play when Biden was still going to be the nominee, and, like,
right.
Biden was looking pretty weak, and Minnesota, like, it wasn't like a blowout last time, and Trump did some rallies, but I think the ticket the Democrats have now is put Minnesota out of play.
And is he popular? Is Walz popular in your neck of the woods?
Well, if my neck of the woods means like my neighborhood, yes.
Yes, but
this is the thing that I get in these discussions with people in Minnesota like all the time.
Right.
Because Minnesota is probably second to Texas in state identity. Like, people in Minnesota love Minnesota. And so they think everyone is like this. So they'll say, well, you lived in Tennessee. I'm like, no, I didn't. I live in Memphis.
Right.
You know, like, I didn't live in Tennessee. Like, whatever. I lived in Memphis. But the reality is, like, Tim Walz is super popular, like, in the Twin Cities. And I'm sure if you go out to some of the suburbs and some of the rural areas of Minnesota, he's less popular. That's just reality everywhere. But the sense I get from people, he's been a very effective governor. And then I think Minnesota generally, I got to say, is a really well-run place from a government perspective. And so, like, things seem to be pretty good. Like,
it
I don't
is
know what he'll do in the debate, but he wants to say, like, our economy's ranked here, or our schools are ranked here, or our healthcare's ranked here, or, like, he's going to have stuff to say, you know?
It is interesting, that rural-urban divide, which you've talked about and written about it sort of extensively over the years, as you point out, it exists everywhere. We see it in
Tennessee.
But what's interesting is that, and maybe it's just, is it the sheer numbers? Or, like, in Tennessee, there is the divide, but the rural wins. You know, the rural runs the show. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think you get into, like, the degree to which the urban centers dominate, and you get into the sort of other demographic factors that are overlay with it. Race is a big one. You know, I mean, Tennessee, East Tennessee is very white, right. You know, comparatively. Like, Tennessee, the rest of Tennessee is not like Memphis in all kinds of ways. I think, you know, in Minnesota, you do have a more of a sort of progressive tradition, especially in northern Minnesota, like a more of a labor kind of situation. So I think there are some rural areas of Minnesota that are a little bit different than rural areas of the rest of the country. But also, the Twin Cities is like 4 million people, and it's the only major city in the state, and it just dominates. It's sort of like Atlanta, you know?
Right.
And that's why you see sort of Georgia more in play, because you have a larger black population in Georgia than, say, you know, in Iowa or whatever. And also, you have Atlanta. And I think in Tennessee...
And Knoxville's probably red.
And Nashville.
Yeah, but Knoxville's red.
And Nashville, but Memphis and Nashville aren't Atlanta, and they aren't the Twin Cities.
Right.
And then you have the different little demographic bit, I think, in the eastern part of the state.
Yeah. All right, Chris, appreciate it.
Thanks.
That is Chris Harrington from The Daily Memphis. Stephanie, do you watch horror movies?
Not a big horror fan. I'm not, like, vehemently opposed to them, but my wife is, so...
There's I got no use.
I mean, I will say,
I just go watch it. I can go back and watch any of the Bills Super Bowls. I could watch Memphis versus Kansas. I got a whole catalog of horror that I can draw from, and I don't ever have to leave the world of sports.
So I really like James McAvoy, and he's the lead of this movie. With that being said, there's still probably a sub 3% chance that I'm going to watch this.
I think I will watch, at least try to watch Rebel Ridge. I think I will. I'm trying to remind myself. That seems like a pretty solid recommendation from Chris. And it's not some. Occasionally, he can give me the quirkier. He'll you know, whatever. The red shoes thing the other day at Crosstown, right? Whatever.
Yeah.
Rebel Ridge. I think I'm gonna seek out Rebel Ridge.
You just heard Don Johnson and you just thought in.
Exactly right. We got Sam Hardiman coming up next. His Pats, 1-0. They're tied atop the AFC East. How about that? We'll talk to him. The Jets. And we'll you know, it's not the Jets. And he picked the Jets to win the AFC East, as you recall. We'll talk to Sam.
Couldn't be me.
More about trees being chopped down and about Governor Bill Lee and about all sorts of things than the Pats. But we'll ask him about the Pats as well. In the meantime, I will tell you, if you've got a big yard or a piece of land you are taking care of, head on down to Mid-South Ag Equipment and get you a smaller Case IH tractor. So if you're planting a big garden, you're mowing excess land, you're bush hogging, whatever else, you don't need a, you know, massive tractor like you would have to you know, cultivate 500 acres of land in Arkansas. But the Case IH tractor is perfect for that. And right now at Mid-South Ag Equipment, they're in stock and 0% financing. That's right, 0% financing. It's on Highway 302 in Byhalia. It's Mid-South Ag Equipment. Go get yourself a tractor this week. Sam Hardiman, when we return, Jeff Calkins, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Joined now by Sam Hardiman from the Daily Memphian on Twitter or X. At Sam Hardiman. Let's see. When we last had Sam on, he said the Jets were going to win the AFC East, and he had very, very low hopes for his New England Patriots for this season. 1 week in, Patriots a sterling 1-0, go into Cincinnati, get the win, and the Jets do not look great in getting blown out by San Francisco. Explain yourself, Sam.
I mean, first of all, I think we know why I'm not a football prognosticator. I think we've learned that. Second, you know, I would say first about my Patriots.
Yeah, how do you feel about that?
I mean, it's like I'm going to be another portion of this program that is just rooting for your football team to fail, and I'm sort of upset that they won. Like I'm interested in the first overall pick. I'm not really interested in these Pyrrhic victories that we had. And look, Christian Gonzalez, our cornerback, our first round pick from 2 years ago, he looks great. It looks like guys are playing hard for Gerard Mayo. That's awesome. Don't win any more football games, please.
They're gonna though. They're gonna because what you just said. Because they've got a good defense and they play hard for Gerard Mayo. And so they're going to win six football games, don't you think?
Yeah, it's probably six. I mean, I probably should have taken the over 5.5. I probably should have done that, but I didn't.
All right, how do you feel about the Jets?
I mean, look, the San Francisco 49ers are a good football team. Aaron Rodgers hasn't played football since he was the star of Hard Knocks 18 months ago. Like, he looked better than you think. Obviously, they didn't have McCaffrey the other night, the 49ers, but I'm fine with the Jets. I think my pick for the Jets, and maybe this is just to sabotage my buddy Jason, who's a diehard Jets fan, I think they're still going to win the AFC East. And, you know, this is a reverse jinx for Jason, really, because if I'm saying it, they're not going to win.
All right, we had good news. I noticed, honestly, it was kind of a nice week. I mean, there's all kinds of news in the city, including the Tyree Nichols case is underway, which is not, obviously, that's a searing moment for everybody, and certainly devastating for the Nichols family. But we did have some good news. I think last week there was the news that the murder rate is down, still not ideal, but the murder rate is down. And then you had a story saying tree-related outages down nearly 80%, according to MLGW.
Yeah, I mean, so last week, Memphis Light Gas and Water presented a bunch of data. They call it reliability metrics. We don't need to go into all of it because people, frankly, don't care. But one thing that stuck out to me was how
how much tree-related outages had gone down. So this year, there have been about 52 tree-related outages, and last year there were about 239, if I'm remembering my own story correctly. And, like, first, like, there's a giant caveat. And the giant caveat is, as Francine is going to start barreling up.
Yeah, today's the day we're talking about this. Today's speaking of jinx, right, exactly.
Yeah, speaking of jinxes. Yeah, I mean, there's just, it's just been a lot milder of a year in, you know, Memphis, Tennessee. That we have not had these horrific blow-in storms that, you know, come with straight-line winds that take trees down and take them into poles, right? And that's a big deal. At the same time, Memphis Light Gas and Water, after not meeting its tree trimming goal for essentially decades, literally decades, did not trim as many trees as it needed to, is well ahead of its goal for 2024. And we have 3 months left in the year. So, you know, it's kind of like, what do you think would happen? Oh, you trim the trees and they don't overgrow and get interwoven into power lines. And then a wind blows, and yeah, that's what will happen. And you have milder weather, which no one can control, despite what people will be saying in 24 hours, you know, saying, Doug McGowan, why did you let the storm roll in?
Right.
Right? Like that is what has happened here. And so that is a positive. And it's a positive because, like, as McGowan says and as other people in Memphis Light Gas and Water say, no one should be thinking about Memphis Light Gas and Water. Things should just work. And so far in 2024, with Francine coming up the interstate here, no one's really thinking about Memphis Light Gas and Water, except for people with some delayed bills.
Yeah, that's one of the interesting things. Oh, well, we are certainly thinking about the bills, MLGNW. I have been thinking about the bills. Twice in the last 2 months, I have my bill on automatic pay unless it's over a certain amount. And each of the last 2 months, I've had to log in and give it clearance to pay the bill because it was over that set amount. But it is true, like in previous cities, the equivalent of MLGNW wasn't really. It's like the offensive lineman, right? You don't really notice them. You only talk about them when things go bad. We didn't particularly talk about them. And so, and then it is sort of amazing to think it was more than a year ago. The truth is, wasn't the massive outage was like a year ago spring or something like that. I think there were a couple last year. But it's been more than a year since those massive outages. And I guess we can knock on wood because of the weather. But we can also, it's nice that if you do decide to pay more for something, that you are actually getting that something. And that seems to be what is happening here. Are they still, MLGNW, though, they had a lawsuit, did they not, against another tree trimming company that wasn't trimming the trees? They paid them and they didn't do the gate. Wasn't that happening? Is that still ongoing?
Yes, there is still a lawsuit between Memphis Light Gas and Water and Asplund Tree Trimming, where essentially MLGNW has accused Asplund of not delivering on their contracted services. And, you know, I'll spare you the gory details of that really interesting lawsuit. But yeah, I mean, MLGNW has essentially said this contributed to us being behind. And now there are three separate crews working on tree trimming for Memphis Light Gas and Water. And, I mean, they're ubiquitous. I mean, one day I was driving down Florida, you know, street headed to southwest Memphis because I like to go snoop on things down there, and I saw two separate crews. You know, like, they are everywhere.
Yeah. No, they were recently in my neighborhood. All right. The other news was that you had was a story about Bill Lee weighed in on these gun control referenda that are being that may or may not appear on the November ballot. What did Bill Lee have to say?
Bill Lee essentially, you know, I asked him the question. He was in town for a youth and investment summit. Essentially, you know, a lot of good community organizations do a lot of work in mentoring youth. He was here to visit them and to tout that. And us media folks, when we get the governor in a room, we really don't ask questions about the thing he wants to talk about. And we just went ahead and asked, so would you carve Memphis out of permitless carry? And would you sign a bill that took sales tax away from Memphis because Memphis wants to put these referendums on the ballot? And first, the governor would not say whether or not he would sign a bill that took sales tax away from Memphis, which has been the threat from House Speaker Cameron Sexton and Lieutenant Governor Randy McNally. He said, essentially, you know, paraphrasing him here, I can't see speculate on what's about to appear before my desk. But Thiessen said the real gist of his comments was the last thing we need is Memphis fighting with the rest of the state, with Memphis taking on the rest of the state. And I think those comments, you know, regardless of your political persuasion, right, really reflect the reality of how people outside of Memphis are perceiving this fight, which is the city of Memphis, the Memphis City Council, is taking on frontally the state of Tennessee over gun laws. And he said, essentially, this is the last thing we want. We can't have 50 different cities with 50 different gun laws. Essentially, he is saying there's going to be one set of gun laws for the entire state of Tennessee. And that's what he said.
Right. I mean, the other argument would be, the flip side would be, we can't have Tennessee telling a massive municipality what to do. Why do you need people in East Tennessee deciding what the laws should be in Memphis, right? I mean, that would be, I'm not even taking a side here. I'm just saying that would be the flip side of that argument, which I can hear too. Did the Shelby County Commission weigh in on this? They were going to weigh in with a resolution supporting the city council. Did that happen?
Yes, they did. Yeah, my colleague Bill Dries covered this with Daily Memphis. You can check it out. Bill Dries is awesome, by the way. Can't say enough about Bill. They essentially in a party line vote, largely, because the Shelby County Commission is actually a partisan body. While everyone on the Memphis City Council largely has a political persuasion, it's a nonpartisan body. The Shelby County Commission is a partisan body, and so essentially in a party line vote, the Shelby County Commission voted to support the City Council's lawsuit against the Shelby County Election Commission, which is the legal fight that will determine whether or not these three referendums get on the ballot.
All right. Thanks, Sam. Appreciate it. You can follow Sam on Twitter or X. Talk to you next week.
Thank you, Jeff.
That is Sam Hardiman from the Daily Memphian. We're going to take a break. I'll tell you, though, that right now, if you're Memphis, if you're Tennessee, if you're Ole Miss, feeling pretty good about yourselves. Feeling so good about yourself, you might want to be wearing your colors. But maybe you don't want to be wearing the Gayrish logo or anything. Maybe you just want to, like, at work, be wearing your colors. And that's a reason to get yourself to O'Call, as if you needed one. O'Call's spectacular. People incredibly nice. Nice has been to describe it. They're deeply experienced. They're incredibly helpful. They literally have transformed the way I look when I want to look good. They've made it possible for the first time in my life, honestly. They also have right now these NCAA approved colors, collegiate colors, for the same lightweight performance shirts you've been wearing all summer. So if you're going to a tailgate or if you're going to the office, you can wear Tennessee orange. You represent Memphis or Ole Miss or Alabama or Arkansas, despite the crushing loss that Arkansas suffered last weekend. It is at O'Call, just among the beautiful clothes at O'Call. Wear your colors. Get to O'Call. We're going to take a break. Back in a moment. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. New cologne. All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Got some things to clean up before we get out of here, Jeffrey, including. Do you remember Ray Gunn, the breakdancer?
Yes, the Australian professor.
Ray Gunn, the Australian breakdancer. Guess where in the world breakdancing rankings Ray Gunn ranks right now?
Number one.
Ray Gunn is the number one ranked, and it is such an embarrassment for the breakdancing organization that they had to put on an explainer about why she is ranked number one.
I assume fan vote?
No, it's not. It's because they only did certain events, and leading up to the Olympics, all the good breakdancers skipped those events, basically. And basically, all the good breakdancers say anyway that these rankings are BS, that they'd rather be out there doing not this competition breakdance and stuff, but they'd be out to be doing real breakdancing out in the world.
Right.
Right?
Stuff that makes money.
So that's what's happening. Oh, yes. So, but Ray Gunn is the number one. If you get frustrated by subjective rankings, just see what it feels like to be a breakdancer. Okay, secondly, Jeffrey. Other news, did you see Liv and PGA are having talks?
So I saw they met yesterday in New York.
Yep. And by the way, there's a blowback there because
it's 9/11.
Today is 9/11.
Yeah.
And so is the day you want to sit down with the Saudis to break bread?
Technically the day before.
Is it? Yes, right. But various 9/11 survivor organizations have criticized LIV and the PGA for sitting down yesterday to talk about some sort of
I mean, in fairness, the PGA Tour's already proven they don't care about that.
Yeah, they don't care about that. So what do you think?
It's better that they're meeting. I still think there's a long, long way to go. And I just think there's so many stakeholders in the PGA Tour that they're just not going to get anything done until there's a group that wants Monahan gone. Like, I just think there's too many hurdles to overcome for there to be, like, supreme optimism for something getting done in the near future.
Did you see that Doug Ferguson wrote a column? So, and Doug Ferguson is the AP golf writer. And so he's kind of it. Like, he's the guy who covers the golf tour with...
I mean, I think he goes to just about every tournament.
Yeah. And he has been for a long time, too. Like, he's been there for a long time. And he wrote a column saying, basically, the playoff is busted. There's no juice in the playoff. Nobody cares about the playoff. And what they should do is the first week of the playoff, move it out of Memphis. He didn't say move.
I think he said move it every other year.
He said rotate it out of Memphis. Yeah. He said, so have it in Memphis 1 year and then have it somewhere else and then have it in Memphis and then have it somewhere else and have it in Memphis and somewhere else. And when this column dropped, I didn't mention it. But my only worry there is it's Doug Ferguson. Like if Joe Schmo had written that column, I wouldn't have cared.
Correct.
If Doug Ferguson is writing it,
the tour wants him.
Is it because the tour wants him to? Exactly. That's the question. The tour wants him to float that possibility.
Or maybe the players do.
Or someone.
There's a stakeholder. Doug Ferguson is a very down the middle. He's not a hot take artist. Like he's the AP writer. AP writers, by definition, have to keep the, you know, between the mayo and the mustard. Like that's the way they have to operate.
Yes.
Now, the exact thing that I was just saying about the number of stakeholders in getting a deal done.
Well, in the end, FedEx writes a check.
Correct.
Like, if FedEx says no, they're not going to, like, whatever. Like, as long as they keep writing the check.
Correct.
And now, they are embarked on massive changes and reconstruction of Southwind, which suggests that they don't plan to go anywhere.
Correct. Now, it's also important to note, if the structure changes and FedEx's voice is no longer
diminished because there's more money coming in from somewhere else.
Right. There's private equity money that's got a bigger stake. Well, then all of a sudden we have an issue. But until those things change, we're okay.
See, Auburn's quarterback said that people are hitting him up on Venmo. He threw four picks, of course, and you pointed out, really not his problem. It's a Hugh Freeze problem because he keeps running him out there.
Correct. Okay. And also, his offensive line did not play well either.
It's not like, yes, but anyway.
I mean, he missed throws. I'm not defending Peyton Thorne.
So he says,
Peyton Thorne is Peyton
on
Thorne.
Social media, whatever, that fans have said that he owes them because they bet whatever. They bet on Auburn or whatnot, and that he owes them.
Yeah,
cash. I, with all due respect, if you are in the public eye at this point, the best thing is to get off social media. You're going to be swamped with this crap. It wasn't surprising to me at all, right?
Wouldn't you rather receive Venmo requests than death threats?
Death threats, but you're going to get that too.
Well, like, yeah, people are
just,
you know, the story
awful.
That they don't write though.
What?
Because it doesn't get the headlines.
What's
doesn't
that?
Click. And also because kids probably don't admit it. There's definitely people that have gotten Venmos
sent to them.
Correct.
Positively.
Correct.
Yes. Yes. That's true. Oh, I'm sure. Well, hell, if you want to, I'm sure there's people who slide into people's DMs offering all kinds of things.
Bingo. Right? But we only hear about the,
yeah, there's bad things,
yes.
But it is a freaking swamp. it is a swamp.
Oh, I totally agree with you on that. But
just
like,
a swamp.
The answer is exactly what you said.
Yeah, it's why, by the way, that this is somewhat unrelated. But if I no one's putting me in charge of schools. But if you're putting me in charge of schools, I'm taking away cell phones the moment someone walks in the door.
Yeah, and I'm giving about like, I the understand, moment they walk out. I understand the door. When everyone's doing the whole, well, what if we need to get a hold of them?
If they need to get a hold of them because there's a school shooting, well, first of all, what does it come to that literally our reason for not taking away phones in schools is because we think someone's going to have a school shooting? That certainly explains where we are.
Yeah, maybe we're not fixing the real problem.
Here's the other thing. You're not going to be able to do anything.
Yeah.
It's just about your
peace of mind.
It's about your peace of mind, but you're not going to be able to, on your phone, stop the shooter. So, no. And whereas the phone does real damage in the hands of kids who are distracted and not learning and whatever else. No, I take away the phones from the moment, and not from SEC quarterbacks. I think they can make their own decisions about whether they're going to have phones, but I certainly do about others. Secondly, you know how over the last few years, we've concluded, like, the Brady-Belichick debate was settled, right?
Yep.
Like, they were both great, and then all of a sudden we realized that Brady went on to win a title. He was greater than Belichick. You know what's happening now? Belichick is better at TV than Brady.
So
is that true?
Yes, but I've also said this.
Isn't it an easier role?
Correct.
It's a much easier role.
And I'm not saying Brady's mistake, because I'm not going to sit there and go, when somebody says, here's $350 million or whatever Fox said, it's 300 plus million, that you made a mistake signing that dotted line. But where I think the Mannings are really smart is, I think that is actually a hard job for someone that is not super trained, because it's a pure broadcast role. And that's it's a different training. People go to school for years and years and years.
To be able to give incisive analysis in real time as it happens is a skill. To be able to have hot takes on something and comment in the way that Belichick does or the Mannings do, you just have to know what you're talking about and be funny.
Correct. And they have the setup where they're just watching the game and they're talking to each other.
Right. There's no
matter if they talk
over
the
play.
They
get in and out and but there's basically nothing to learn.
Right, but that's very...
It's honestly the difference between this, which is its own, so that I'm doing, which is its own, like, whatever, I'm better at it than I used to be. That's true. But it's not that different. Whereas if I tried to do what you do on a Friday night, calling an MUS game...
It's a different mindset.
That is a skill.
Yeah, I mean, I also take a look at, like, think about how much different radio is now than even it was 20 years ago. There's not much difference between radio now and podcasting, with the extreme, you know, we have breaks and whatnot, but for the most part...
Loosely.
We have formatted breaks rather than, more live ads and whatnot, but we have those too. Whereas an actual game analyst role...
That's hard.
And so now, it was game one. I actually think this is true, though. Why most people were underwhelmed with Brady, he's got kind of a thinner voice.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't really, it's lynch. But I think why
he's
most
people. He's got John Madden.
Right.
In his voice.
Why I think most people are mad at Brady is Deshaun Watson was horrible, and he had been billed to us as he's going to tell it like it is, and he just wouldn't go there.
He did not say he was horrible.
Mm-mm. Wouldn't even, like, touch it. I think that's why a lot of people were frustrated. Like, hey, man, like, you're Tom Brady. What's he seeing? Like, and even maybe, like, I think some people would have been...
Okay, here's the question, though. Will he get better?
I think he will. I think one of the big...
Belichick, by the way, you said great right out of the gate.
Yeah, yes. They have mechanics to work out, but that's it. Like,
But the job is the kind of job you knew he'd be... Like,
correct. Yeah. He's just watching football.
Yeah.
And with Brady... I think the mistake he made was he felt, like, over-prepared, where he had, like, these lists he was trying to get to and whatnot. Like, it felt like he was trying to say, here's all the stuff I learned about this game, rather than just watching
reacting
the game.
And saying,
yes.
Here's what I'm seeing.
Correct.
And what you should... Yeah. That will be interesting to see.
Also, it's really hard to be good on a crappy football game. Really hard.
But if he had savaged Deshaun Watson,
that's a huge part of it.
To be good on a crappy football game,
yes.
Right? To searingly just say, this is a disaster.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. And that's like, I give Aikman credit. Like, Aikman will do that.
Aikman's star. It feels like Aikman's, there's a refresh appreciation for Aikman now.
I think so, too. And I think there always comes a situation where when you've been in our living rooms for as long as he has, like, eventually there's, like, some, like, okay, this
grudging
is, like,
acknowledgement.
Yeah, like, this, all right, this feels like a big game.
Yeah. All right. All right, we got to get out of here. Jeffrey, what is coming up next on 92.9?
Here's what's coming up next.
Jeff, here's what's coming up next on Jason and John Nordenherd joins their program today. Joining us on Jeffrey Wright and Company, Kevin Cerrito will be with me today. We'll have our 901 Wrestling Champions. Also, CJ Hurt going to join us during hour number two. It's Wednesday, so Cobb joins Gabe at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We got to get out of here. Back tomorrow for Now Work is Done.